Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist.
I gotta give a shout out to Zeit Gang, Zeitgeist listener Smooth Lou, I believe is the name. Smooth Lou, who solved the mystery. Did you see this on Twitter?
No, 2000. Wait, what was it?
Grand Pooba. It's a Grand Pooba track. From 1995, I guess.
Did you go back and you checked it out?
Yeah. It's definitely, that's the song.
Oh, wait, wasn't there just a track called 2000?
Yeah. I don't know why it took us so long. I guess it like didn't really hit that hard on the internet.
Wow.
Yeah, check out that song. It's kind of good. I stand by my reference.
2000.
Yeah, man.
I still love it. Yeah, okay. The energy is still there. Wow. Right. Shout out Zeit Gang. Honestly, you guys fucking, between all of y'all, we don't need Google. And we could have Googled it, but it was hard to just Google 2000 song lyric. We really tried.
So Smooth Lou, great Twitter handle. Even better at saving my ass from making it seem like I was referencing a Billy Joel song.
Yeah. Smooth Lou, we owe you a hamburger.
Yes. Smooth Lou came through with that, said, I got you, fam. Thanks for all you do. And then somebody else came through and vouched for Smooth Lou. Was like, pretty cool dude. I miss you, Smooth Lou. Zeit Gang forever. So much love to Smooth Lou.
Wow.
This one goes out to you. All right, Miles. It's a special episode. We're talking labor.
I'm still blown away that Smooth Lou put this together. I'm reeling.
I mean, did you hear it? Did you hear the song? No.
I started playing it a second ago, and I'm like, this is big. Wow. Yeah. You know,
big poop ahead over here.
Yeah. Damn. All right. Anyway, sorry.
Back
to you, Jack.
And back to you, Miles.
Yep. No, back to you. Back to you, fam. Nope.
So this episode, we are, and I'm still going to go back to you, pal.
Mm-hmm. Shoulders are loose.
Yeah. Shoulders loose. Head on a swivel.
Yeah,
the hips got honey in them.
3-point stance.
So it's time. You know what that means? It's time to be thrilled to be joined in our third seat by a professor of Alaska Native Languages at the University of Alaska Southeast, the host of the podcast The Tongue Unbroken from the Next Up Initiative. Yeah. Please welcome Dr. Hune Lance Twitchell.
Hi, it's me. I'm the problem. I'm colonization. Hey, how's it going? It's so good to see you guys.
Yeah,
it's good to have you back.
You know, someone tried AI with our Thlinget language.
And no.
So there's a reporter here in Juneau for the Juneau Empire. And so she had entered she wrote a short story, and then she entered it into this thing that had the Thlinget language as an option. And then she sent it to me. She said, could you just take a look at this? And I said, well, those are words, but it's just grabbing words and just putting them at random, ooh, including my name. Like my name was in the story like 10 times. And so I said, wow, it's just complete gibberish. It makes no sense.
So the
whatsoever.
Computer, like from it trying to glean information about Klingit, that it found your name and was like, okay, so this must also be part of the mix.
Yeah.
So and just, here we go. Here's your story. Wait, how did it maybe, read?
Well,
like,
it was
just truly out of order, just like word salad.
Yeah. There's a couple of words, but like one of the big problems is when you change a verb in our language is it changes a lot. And so to be able to, man, you could develop something that could manufacture stuff in our language, but you would have to spend a lot of hours. And so what it seems like it did is found a dictionary and just sort of grabbed words, but never really looked at what they mean, I guess. And so it's just like, here's a bunch of words. Here's a word salad. And that's your story. So, you know.
Task complete. Yeah. I mean, that's good. Good to know that AI is still, right now, it's only fucking up like English. You know?
Yeah, right. And so, but it's probably coming for everything eventually. And so, but maybe there's a world where you have someone to talk to. Because with our language, we have about 40 people left who could speak. So it does get pretty scary. And we have a language north of us that's called Eyak that lost its last living bird speaker. And when she was the only speaker for quite a while, she would say, I talk to my TV, I talk to the walls, I talk to God, and nobody talks to me. So like what we're trying to do is like keep that from happening. So I started with a take on a Taylor Swift song, because I thought maybe if we can get the Swifties and the Beehive on board with decolonization,
right?
Like they've got so much energy and commitment. And so I think maybe we'll get somewhere.
Yeah, I think it definitely makes sense for Taylor Swift. I feel like her career has gone from being just like, aw shucks, I don't know, I guess I'm just kind of a good songwriter, to like we've like witnessed her waking up a little bit to the complexities of the modern world. So I don't know.
Or at least private equity.
Yeah.
You know?
Which isn't that where albums. Her...
Yeah, so that's why I got those new albums, private equity. Because of the
baby.
Taylor's version, baby, private equity, all lines go back there.
Hey. Even a broke clock, you know?
Yeah.
What is something from your search history that is revealing about who you are?
My search history is chaotic and just like, so I looked at it and was like, oh, this screams, help me. I was looking up asexuality, the difference between attraction and desire, but I was also looking at STI rates in America and non-toxic condoms.
Okay, so asexuality, yeah. STI rates, what are toxic condoms?
Most condom companies are owned by the same five companies. And if you get a box, you'll notice that it doesn't have ingredients listed on them, but they do have ingredients. They're just not required to, which is really crazy. And a lot of the ingredients are harmful, irritating, or in some cases, toxic. I didn't know that. Like, I do all this research for the show that I have, and I just interviewed these ladies who have a non-toxic condom company, and I had the same reaction. I said, I'm sorry, what?
Right.
I've like, you know, been with a toxic dude or two, but I didn't realize I was...
The condoms as well.
Yeah, that seems like something I can control. So yeah, things like parabens or preservatives, like why would a condom have preservatives?
For the flavor.
Keep it fresh. On okay, but shelf.
You're not
shelf
wrong.
Stable.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Right? Is it?
but if it's just if you just have latex and just silicone,
right.
You don't need those other things.
Right.
So what is it preserving exactly?
Your pleasure.
The patriarchy.
I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't,
no. Dead ass. Like that's really what it is. It's like
truly. It's like, I don't know. It doesn't fuck the guy up.
Yeah, basically.
So we're
basically
good over here.
It's just all those memes about like, is he worth risking your pH over this? It's like, no, that's really accurate.
Right. Yeah. Truly. Oof.
I know. So anyway, that's how I spend my time.
There you go. Django, what's something you think is overrated?
Oh my God. Well, this is going to kind of fly in the face of my whole summer tomatoes love. But I am coming to the conclusion these last couple of years that I think the season of summer is overrated. I think
it's two days in a row.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No shit.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. It's a consensus. Yeah. I think it's just too hot. People are a little too weird and angry in New York City, especially. It just kind of like fucks the brain chemistry a little. So I think as I get older, I'm quickly transitioning to a fall man. I think fall is where it's at. Fall is where all the dreams come true. Summer is just sticky, repetitive, day in, day out.
Yeah.
Rain falling apart. Can't sleep at night. 3 showers a day. I just can't take it anymore, guys.
You're a fall guy.
I'm a fall guy. There you go.
Yeah.
It gets really positive media. Like we were talking about how heat waves, the deadliest weather event in the United States year in, year out, and the photographs that get like posted next to that story in the news is like children playing in a sprinkler or like drinking out of a fire hose or
right. not a people fire at the hose, beach.
But, yeah, like going to the beach or just somebody sweating while pouring water on their head. So it's like, but yeah, summer, I mean, in addition to just like the straight up heat deaths, like violence always rises during the summer. Bad time.
They should show the B-roll should be like a guy freaking out of the subway, like, my car's not working. Like losing his mind. That's what summer kind of evokes for me these days.
Yeah. It's interesting, too, how climate change is just completely souring people now on seasons that used to be like the coolest one. Like,
I know.
So, like, it used to be like no one would ever like, I think summer is overrated. Unless you're like someone who's like, I get burned easily. But now it's truly it's fucking unbearable at times outside. And that isn't a good feeling. But I wonder if then that swings with like winter when we get like more intense winters and be like, yeah, fuck the Arctic freezes that we have every 6 months too.
Yeah.
Got a lot in store, it seems like.
What's something you think is underrated?
Oh, boys, strap in for this one. I've lately become all about room temperature water.
Okay.
I think I want my water the same temperature as my body. I don't want it hurting my teeth. I don't want space in my refrigerator, my tiny New York refrigerator filled. So lately it's been a pitcher of water on the counter at, you know, a nice 80 degrees, pound it easy. That's my approach going forward.
So it's not a sipping thing. It's more like you're doing like a F1 pit stop just to get the hydration in quickly.
Yeah. Purely efficiently. And also In the same way the media hypes up summer, the media will hype up glistening cold glasses of water with perfect cubic ice cube. I don't think that's about it. I think water should be nice and mild so as not to offend my delicate sensibilities.
Oh, I feel like I can only drink ice water. I don't know why. I just like it feels. I think that's how in my mind I elevate ice like water to like a fun thing.
Oh, shit.
Like, it's cold and nice and crisp, but now I can just drink jugs of it. But body temp water. All right, I'll try it. I'll think of it in the way of like it's more about how can I get it down quickly.
Yeah, I'm one of those like neurotic drink a shitload of water every day guys. So I think it just makes it easier for me. So maybe if you had more like pleasurable relationship with water, it'd be different. But for me, it's all about the function.
Right.
Yeah, why do I think room temp water is like drinks slower than cold water? Is that just because of that my preference is cold water? I'm not sure. But yeah, I think I can like just hammer back a lot of cold water and room temp water is like harder to get down.
Don't you ever get the shivers?
I don't, no.
Oh, man, you guys are...
You get the shivers, Django, from a little water?
100%, man.
Your lips turn
cold,
blue.
Man.
You're like,
I'm a delicate little flower. I think that's the lesson we're learning here. Is I really?
Yeah, it's like the water can't be too hot or too cold. Now it has to be just around the temperature of his internal organs.
Yeah.
Something related to what you said about tooth pain that I've just discovered is underrated for me is sensitive toothpaste. I wasn't. For some reason, I was just not paying attention to that as an option. I've started using it lately, and my teeth don't hurt anymore when I eat stuff that's cold or hot. So, yeah, I don't know. I lumped sensitive toothpaste in with elderly toothpaste for some reason.
Yeah, like, yeah. Like, what is this
for people with dentures?
Yeah, that's how it started. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But we all got those little sensitive spots. You know, sometimes it's better to do it like that. You got a GTA 5 poster behind you?
Oh, is this me? Oh, Jesus. No, this is South Vietnam. North Vietnam.
The edge of it, the bottom of it,
which
looks
would be
like
a great place for the GTA franchise to go. The Vietnam War, carjacking people in Saigon.
Yeah, right. Exactly, at the fall of Saigon. Okay, because there's like that little peninsula at the bottom because I'm so video game brained. I'm like, oh, is that a GTA 5 map, bro?
No, totally. I get it now. Yeah, yeah. And it does have little icons, you know, like banks and safe houses.
Cool, cool, cool.
All right, let's take a quick break and we'll come back and talk about an imploding presidential campaign. We'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan, and if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. And we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by a very funny comedian, writer, executive producer, TV host, and labor organizer who you know from Adam Ruins Everything, his podcast Factually, and being out in these streets picketing, acting as a member of the negotiating committee serving on the WGA West Board of Directors. It's Adam Conover!
Adam! Oh, it's lovely to be here. That was all my credits. I have a lot of titles all of now. Them. Half of those things I'm not doing now because I'm on strike. I'm not a TV host right now.
I mean, that's all cat. Former. Never mind those things.
Nascent.
When it's all over, I'll be back on your screens, you know?
There you go.
Yes, yes, yes.
Well, thanks for joining us. I can't imagine this is a busy time for you at all.
Sounds
like you got nothing going on.
I was just out on the street, you know, for 3-4 hours, 90 degree heat with a sign, talking to people. It's a blast, man. I'm having so much fun out there. The solidarity feels so good. It's great. I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, people are making sacrifices, you know, but there's our political director, this wonderful woman, Rachel Torres. She's brilliant. She told me, you know, if you're smiling while you're sacrificing, if you're having a good time while you're making the sacrifice, then they can't beat you. And I think that is really true.
Yeah.
For sure.
Just big cheerleader smiles out there on the...
Yeah. People are having a great... It's a party. A guy brought a sound system to Netflix, and now he's playing like sort of mid-tempo, like dance music, you know?
Feels
like kind of that outdoor day club, like pool club kind of...
Right.
Like people almost feel like they should be having frozen cocktails walking around. Like, it's just the vibes are good. And then he's like remixed, like... people giving speeches, like Fran Drescher's speech. Someone told me he like remixed one of my TikToks into a song of like, you know, see you on the picket line. Yeah.
And you sent him a takedown notice immediately, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah.
Better.
Yeah, like who signed off on
that? But yeah, I mean, We were talking, this feels like a huge moment for labor. These are, you know, with the WGA, some of the most influential, like unionized, union protected workers on the planet. But with actors, with the Screen Actors Guild, you know, the faces, the,
the
beauty.
Yeah, it's the brain, the beauty and brains coming together, you know?
But yeah, I don't know. Just kind of thinking about this, thinking about the history of labor and unions in Hollywood, it feels like Hollywood to this point, the fact that unions have been a presence in Hollywood for as long as they have, it's a great learning moment for why capitalism doesn't work without unions, basically.
Right.
Like yeah.
Well, it's an open question whether capitalism works at all, you know?
Yeah. And I think you're arguing, like unions are the thing that keep people from being like, oh, Marx was definitely right. It's like we're just bad enough that people are like I don't know, it's not that bad.
Yeah. Right. I mean, look, I sort of don't get into Marxism, socialism. I don't do isms. I just know that the union and the union structure is the only way to fight back, right? And so I, you know, the union is a hammer and I grab the hammer and I start smashing shit. And it's really fun. Yeah. So, I mean, the only reason people even think of writing, acting, directing as being lucrative jobs, you know, like if you say, oh, my cousin's an actor in L.A., you might be, oh, if he's working, he's making good money. Right. That's what your assumption is. That's only because we've had strong unions in this town for 90 years. The Writers Guild was founded 90 years ago. And it's only because those unions went on strike. The last time the writers and actors went on strike together was 1960. And in that negotiation, we won our health and pension plans and we won the existence of residual payments, which are the payments we get every time the product is aired.
Right.
And that's why I have a health and pension today is because they went on strike then. That's why I've gotten residuals to help tide me through the slow periods of my career is because of those actors and writers going on strike. And so now it's our turn to do the same thing. And that's why we're out there.
Yeah. As a thought experiment, I was trying to think of like, what do we think the last 90 years of movies and TV look like if the industries were never unionized?
YouTube. Looks like YouTube.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, people barely scraping by. Or it looks like, I mean, look at Korea, for instance. There was, or the anime industry, right? Those are two extremely popular, you know, they make a lot of media that's consumed by a lot of people. And the people who make the media aren't able to make a living. There was a great piece in the LA Times a couple weeks ago about how the guy who created Squid Game, you know, and Netflix trotted this guy's story out as a hero story, you know. Oh, he tried to make the show for 10 years and he couldn't make it until Netflix gave him a chance. It became a worldwide hit, right? That guy made from the first season, which was again, worldwide smash, like Game of Thrones level, you know, people watching it. He made $200,000.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's a good living, right? That's not what you should get if you made the most popular show ever, right? And that's the guy who created the show. The people who work on the shows and the people who create, you know, your more average K-dramas, right? That, you know, I hear about one or two K-dramas or K-comedies a year, but you know, the ones that are a little further down the pipe that the real fans watch. Those people are literally not making a living making television. They are writing those shows in between their day jobs, or they're working 18-hour days. And then when the show ends, they're just like, well, back to my day job, right? And this article, you can look up LA Times, you know, Squid Game, Korean, Google that and you'll find the article, goes into really long detail on that. And the reason is there's no unions. And Netflix is exploiting that. I mean, they talk about Netflix came into that market and said, oh, we want to, you know, spread Korean content around the world.
Right.
And they created a lot of work. They created a lot of shows, but no one's being paid because the work standards are so abysmal. It's sweatshop media, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had no idea that was the thing. I mean, again, obviously, because a lot of Korean media is so good that I was like, okay, this is a natural progression of things. Netflix is going in. Like, but there was a moment when I was like, oh, they're going in. Like, to the point where I was like, oh, they're really trying to put their foot down in Korea. I had no idea. It was because they're like, yeah, man, you can get away with anything over here.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, it's just like it's a car company, you know, moving to Mexico, right? Or to any other, or, you know, Nike in Bangladesh. right? It's they are taking advantage of poor work standards to get the product a lot cheaper. And, you know, why do the companies love anime? You know, it's awesome as an American, you know, someone who grew up, you know, trading VHS tapes of anime,
right,
that it's like popular in the U.S. now. It's popular around the world. That's great. But I mean, you guys know that horrible conditions that anime is made in. I mean, people die in that industry.
Yeah, like the Simpsons would make jokes about it, I remember. And yeah. I was like, is that a joke or is that one of those Simpsons jokes? So they're like, no, that's real. Just so you know. It's
awful. It's awful. And that's one of the reasons they're pumping it out, is they feel that they can, you know, get more content for less dollars. Now, the thing about that, though, is that American media is still the most popular, valuable media in the world, right? It's still what people want to watch, like from a big budget thing like Avatar 2, right, to, you know, even, you know, reruns of old sitcoms, right? People are still watching Friends in Australia, you know?
Yeah, and, Ireland. Yeah.
Yeah, and new shows as well, right? That is what people want to watch more than anything else, both in America and around the world. And one of the reasons for that is because the entertainment industry has been the only place that paid creators fairly for the last 100 years. You know, if you are a great writer and you want to make, if you want to buy a big house off of your writing, you know, where are you going to go? Are you going to work in journalism? Are you going to work in novels? No, you're going to go try to sell a big movie script, right? That's been the pattern in Hollywood up until basically the early 2000s, where you had the best writer. Literally Faulkner and Fitzgerald came to Hollywood, right, to write movies. And, you know, they both drank themselves to death. But
too much money.
Yeah. But, you know, that was the way it worked. And the companies have broken that compact. And as a result, the content is getting worse, unfortunately. But, you know, we're entering this Marvel period where they're trying to, you know, they say, oh, the actor doesn't matter. The writing doesn't matter. All that matters is Spider-Man. People will go to see Spider-Man no matter what, you know, no matter who's in the suit, no matter what he's saying, right? And it's not actually true because, you know, look at what happened with The Flash, right? They realize they can't just cram in superheroes and expect people to show up.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, all that makes the CEOs think is they need to pump harder. They need to, you know, get more blood out of that stone. But so these companies are destroying the compact. And why did the compact work? Because of unions. We had strong unions here that you know, meant we had good working conditions, that meant people wanted to move here to Los Angeles or to New York to make the content. And we're fighting to change that, to make it the way it should be.
I feel like The Flash is a good example of, you know, The Flash recently came out, Indiana Jones recently came out, and the primary complaint that you heard from them is creepy CGI, like terrible, weird CGI that takes you out of it. And like effects are a frequent complaint, and you hear people like wonder why, like how this happens on some of these movies. They spent $300 million on effects, and it's at least partially because the effects houses are not unionized.
Correct.
Like, that is not a part of the industry that is protected. And so you have situations where the effects house that won the Oscar for Life of Pi is out of business by the time they get the award. You know?
Yeah. Or, you know, if you talk to, I've talked to people who work at effects houses for Marvel, and they're treated terribly. You know, they're asked to do impossible things on impossible turnarounds that, you know, we want it like this. No, we want it like this. You have to change everything, but we're not going to pay you more, and you have half as much time to do it. You know, that kind of request. The people who work at these companies, you know, their careers last 5 years and then they burn out because they can't do it anymore. It's a lot like video games.
Right.
And, you know, the proof is in the pudding. But also, you know, we're in a new era of the special effects. Right. It used to be that the special effects, the CGI was there to impress and delight the audience. Right. Oh, my God. Look at the Terminator and Terminator 2. Right. He's melting. He's the Melty Man.
It's
look
liquid.
How cool. Or Toy Story. Right. Look how great it looks. Now they use it as a cost cutting device. They use it in order to, they're like, oh, if we just like send it all to a VFX house that's non-union and make them do all the work, it's a lot cheaper. You know, if you look at the difference between, look, the new Mission Impossible, right? I saw it. Look, it's not a good movie, but it's,
you don't think it's an accurate depiction of AI?
Well, it is interesting that the villain is AI, right? But the script is, I don't want to get into it, right? But the action scenes, right? It's got these two incredible action sequences that are totally worth seeing in a theater. Had people hooting and hollering. Great time. And why did they work so well? Because they fucking happened in real life. Because right. they put in the effort and the craft and the time to, you know, go to the place and do the stunt and shoot the thing, or to build the set, or to buy the car, or to put the person in the place, right?
Right.
And for movies like The Flash, they're like, just have the guy stand in front of a green screen and we'll make some underpaid couple bozos do it. You know, sorry, they're not bozos. They're great artists, but they're underpaid. They don't have enough time.
Yeah,
they're
working in terrible conditions.
Yeah, so it's cut rate. It's sweatshop content, you know. And
what about another lightning portal in the sky? What if we did one of those? I feel like those are just
people just coming out of portals and stuff.
Yeah. There's portals, right? There's flashy stuff. Yeah.
Adam, I got to ask though, right? Like these costs, the studio's got to cut costs because I've heard it straight from their mouths. Times are tough.
Oh, yeah.
For studios. I heard Bobby J, I'll say Iger in a very fancy way, you know, really be out here being like, you know, their demands are unrealistic or other people. I've heard the thing over and over that times are hard for studios. And we've talked a lot about this where, you know, Iger's pay was what, approaching $27 million for the year. And like people like what David Zaslav almost be like $250 million in 2021.
Yeah.
How would you define if from their perspective? It's that they're trying to inaccurately describe a problem that they have created through their own business decisions.
Yeah, I mean, that's a wonderful answer to your own question. That's a great way to put it. I mean, look, these guys are raking it in. And let's be really clear. So writer-producer pay has fallen by 23% at the median over the last 10 years. That's the Writers Guild's own figures. That's total pay. Over the same time, show budgets have gone up by 50%. Revenue has gone up. Profits have gone up for these companies, just their entertainment divisions. I'm not even talking about, you know, Disney's got sports, they've got theme parks. We're not talking about that. We're just talking about literally the entertainment divisions of the companies. Revenue, profits, budgets all up while our salaries go down. At the same time, they're paying these companies, these CEOs, massive amounts of money. I mean, Bob Iger, when he made those comments, he had just negotiated for himself an additional 2 years. And he's making an extra $50 million a year. That guy doesn't fucking need that money. He's already incredibly wealthy. If you look at the aggregate he's made over the last 10 years, well, how dare he go on television and plead poverty while the rest of us are not able to make a living, while his workforce is not able to make health insurance or, you know, make a living anymore. It's revolting.
But it's line goes up shit, right? It's they're answering to the Wall Street. And for Wall Street, it's never enough. Like when you have a good year, that is an indication that you should keep being better years. Like that's we want to consistently see that line.
But also but it's not just that, because growth is possible, right? If you do, you can do it the right way.
Right.
You can pay everybody properly and make good shit that people actually like and make more money. That's my belief in life. And there's companies that fucking do it, right? And also, it's what the entertainment industry did for a long time. Like, a lot of people were paid shitty in the entertainment industry. You know, like the unions are the ones that, you know, that protected us. PAs have always been paid shittily. There's a lot of bad shit in Hollywood. But like, you know, from the 80s through the 2000s, everybody liked the product, right? We had peak TV. Right. Everyone had cable. We were watching ads. We were fine with it. We could watch on demand or use DVR if we needed to. You know what I mean? Everything was people were making so much money. People were going to the movie theater. The content was good, you know, and the people who made it were paid. And now what's happening? People don't like the product anymore.
Right.
You know, the Netflix revolution was a lie. That they, you know, the idea that you could pay $15 a month and never have to pay another penny and never watch an ad and watch every show ever made. They were lying to the public that that was possible. They destroyed a profitable business model in order to find a new one. And but at the same time, they kept enough of the money for themselves that the people at the top are doing better while everyone else does worse. But the companies would grow more if they did it the right way, period.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The golden age of TV is a great example of the WGA working because, you know, like you mentioned, like the WGA and like the things that the WGA has provided like writers with, like the ability to make a living during dry periods or whatever, like helps writers, you know, remain writers. And a lot of the best TV is created by people with the long time experience in like past successful and unsuccessful TV shows. Like Breaking Bad is created by a former X-Files writer. Like there's a big break between those. Sopranos comes from a writer on Northern Exposure. Like Matthew Weiner cut his teeth on Becker and In-Laws before he got on Sopranos.
You know
and
your shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, but like the, you know, on your episode where like, where you were talking about the strike, you were talking to, I think, David Goodman.
Yeah.
Who, and, you know, he's a Family Guy writer who told a story about how he almost quit the industry, but like a residual check for a show he wrote on in the past that he said like wasn't very good, but it got him through so that he could keep being a writer. And there's just all this information that gets passed down. Like, I forget where I heard it, but somebody was saying that like, the family tree of all of the Golden Age TV shows, it all like traces back to Columbo, and like that show then like created all, like all the writers on that became showrunners on other shows, and it just like branched down. So we magically have this period of golden era TV. But like that doesn't happen if the television industry works the way, like the industry that I think all three of us have a background in is like creating content for the internet.
And
just the way that we've seen that devolve over the past 15 years.
It doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah. It doesn't exist. Like
there were no guardrails, and there were no ways to, you know, like ensure good outcomes for the people that were contributing to that environment either.
Because they the companies decided to sell them for parts, you know? I mean, I play video games, right? So I like reading video game websites. There's no such thing as video game websites anymore. I mean, there's sites where people upload shit for free, like YouTube, right?
Yeah. Right.
Where people put in all the work and all the risk themselves of putting up work. And then, you know, if you're lucky, you get paid by YouTube if you happen to hit, right?
Right.
But in terms of being somebody who's like a journalist who covers video games, goes to E3, interviews people, breaks stories, right? There literally are not outlets left that pay people to do this because they've been stripping them for parts. One of them that I read is Kotaku. I've read it for years. They're trying to replace those writers with AI. They're trying to like, and like, what's the fucking point of that? Do they think I'm going to go to Kotaku.com to read AI generated articles? I also have ChatGPT. I can just ask ChatGPT if I want an AI answer. Why are you hiring someone to copy paste from ChatGPT? What the fuck is the point of that? Why destroy your own industry? People go because they like the people.
Right.
Right. And I guess there's like that. That's just like that disconnect we see like in every industry where, again, there's like a motive to make sure that like you provide value to shareholders while completely like missing sight of like the actual products that are being made. If consumers are going to be savvy enough, because look, I love bullshit reality TV, but I like actually well-written television also. And I can already see that shift to Max was like sort of like a preview of like the worlds we're looking at. It's like, well, remember HBO, there's that. And then there's just all this other unscripted nonsense that
fucking
also is really
shit.
Cheap to make. And like, you know, kind of maybe where things should be going if writers and actors don't get off their shit.
Max is such an antithesis of the last, you know, of how you build a successful media company, right? Like HBO, there's a wonderful book about HBO. I read it this year called It's Not TV. It's just a history of HBO from the beginning. What you realize, HBO is like this, you know, starts out as just a cable company that, you know, you pay extra and you can watch fights and stuff like that, right?
Right.
And then they find this niche of, oh, we can make content that doesn't exist on broadcast, right? We can make something that's edgy. We can da 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 da, right? And they build
Dream On.
Exactly, Dream On, right? This show with a
shout out Brian,
used to watch
Ben.
That because there was boobs in it, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
But you know, they do the Larry Sanders Show, they do the Sopranos, right? And they sort of create prestige TV as created by HBO to the point where, you know, by up to, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, you know, if a show comes out on HBO, you're like, I'm going to assume this show is good, right? Because you know that their creative culture is like, if HBO's putting their muscle behind that, it's got to be good. There's exceptions. There's stinkers, of course.
Yeah, sure.
Like The Idol or whatever. But that's it's the cathedral of television and people know that, right? And so when Netflix comes along and all these other channels starting their streamers, what would have been the easiest thing in the world? Call the streamer HBO.
Yeah.
People are already subscribed to HBO for $15 a month. There's a streaming service called HBO. Have HBO make more shows. Keep the brand that people know, the thing people care about. They actually like HBO. It's for adults. It means something to people. It's not TV, it's HBO. Instead, now HBO is a vertical underneath this mystery meat thing, Max, that no one's ever heard. That's not a brand. That was literally what they called it instead of Plus. They're like, should we call it HBO Plus? No, too small. We'll call it HBO Max, right? It's extreme HBO. And then like, but then they got rid of the part that people fucking knew and just called it Max. That's like if Disney Plus just called itself Plus.
Right.
People are there for the Disney.
Yeah.
They're not there for the Plus. I'm so mad.
Mouse ears.
And then the Max ads were all trading on these like icons of film. Like the things that like are completely outside of the model that they're trying to force things in the direction of.
Or call it fucking Warner Brothers. People know Warner Brothers. Call it Warner Max. People love the people have been watching Warner Brothers in this country for 100 years. Like just call it that. But instead, you know, Zaslav treats this company, it's like a stock portfolio to him, right? He's like, oh, I put this in, I put that in, I put that in. That's my tranche of content. That's my big batch of content. I don't give a shit what it's called, right?
Yeah.
Because his plan is to sell it or whatever he wants to do. He's financialized it. But that's not how you build a media brand. And, you know, it's a shame. Like, it often feels stupid to say, why don't these companies like respect these old time values of having like a good media brand that people actually care about, you know, that means something to people. But like, I feel stupid saying that because they don't care. They only care about money. But like, they lose money by doing this, you know, like people. How have we forgotten the lessons of the last 100 years of capitalism? Did these people go to fucking marketing school? Like, it's just basic brand shit. Yeah. Sorry, I'm mad.
No, but it's true. I mean, it's so reactionary, and it's everything about like whatever is good in the short term with no long term thinking. Like everybody's getting into streaming. I guess we're getting into streaming too. Wait, what does it take to do that? And now we see, like, I mean, like with HBO Max, we saw half of the shit that was like interesting to people get absolutely vaporized.
Yeah,
it's hard.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back to talk more about this and AI.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. And
so to my question.
Just repeat that question.
Yeah. But I, like I was saying, no, like, and I think if you didn't just skip ahead, the point being is, I think there's a lot of, like, you've spit a lot of facts every time you've come on, but that have really made me think about how much the way that we, this, like, our societies were built and this country was built, how much it affects us now, how much it poisons us now, to the point that we have no connection to each other, community, to land and things like that. Do you see this as part and parcel of that disconnect, or is there another way you're looking at it?
Well, so I guess I think of a couple of things. One is, when I was going to school in Hawaii, I was living with one of my teachers named Larry Kimura, who we call him the godfather of the Hawaiian language movement. He's an amazing person. And at one point he kind of started going off about these people wearing these shirts that say Aloha Aina, which is like love the land. And he says, "You love the land? Show me your fingers. You got dirt underneath your fingernails. Mm. Have you been out working in the land? You've been digging, you've been planting stuff, you've been doing stuff." And so for me, I think if the world starts glitching out, go out on the land, right? Just go see what's out there and go get your hands dirty. And then I also, sometimes I have theories that maybe people don't want to hear. So I was in a class on American literature, and the theme of the class was paranoia. And at the sort of culminating moment in the class, this was for an MFA in creative writing, and the teacher, who was a great guy. And he said, "Well, why do you guys think there's so much paranoia in American literature?" And this person had an answer, and that person had an answer, and that person had an answer. And I raised my hand. I said, "Well, I think it's because America stole everything from Native American peoples, and they're just kind of waiting for their comeuppance. And I also think that you can really geek out on sci-fi theories and stuff, so you don't have to assume that your ancestors did something really horrible." And so I think if people say, "No, this is all part of this larger program that we have no control of," I think it's another system to avoid doing the work that it's going to take to sort of start moving towards a sense of equity, which is totally attainable, which is totally possible. But right. I think colonization sets up all of these mechanisms, like either like it's already in place, it's too late to do anything, it's this thing or that thing, or the limitlessness of resource extraction and the absolute limit of budgets and time and energy, right? And so it just sort of gets you trapped into these systems. So for me, I'm always paranoid that something is racism, and I'm always paranoid that something is colonization. And I'm usually right, but I'll also say, you know, so that's my matrix that I'm stuck in, you know? So right. Sometimes I'll be dealing with something else, like, is this a colonization thing, or is this a race? Like, am I getting treated different because of, you know, my name, or because of who I am or how I look? Are my kids being treated different? And so I'm always sort of, I'm paranoid myself.
Right.
But I'm also, I have it, you know, I don't have a TikTok channel for it, but I've been right quite a few times with this kind of stuff too. So for me, I think it's fascinating and it's neat to look at. And like, I have friends who've seen UFOs, and I have friends who've seen, we have our own monsters here that live in the woods. We went camping last weekend and it's fun. It's a blast. Like, we're in Alaska. You can just walk out your door and you're in the wilderness. But that means, you know, the dog starts barking, you're cooking some delicious dinner out in the middle of nowhere in the dark. Well, it's not in the middle of nowhere, but right. far from, you know, a hospital.
Right.
And the dog's barking and looking down the trail, and you're like, grab all the food, get in the cabin, you know, because there's probably, you know, like, we respect the grizzly bear so much that we got two names. Like, so Hoots is what we would call it. So it means brown bear. And we say Tsik for black bear. But the brown bear is the one that's, it owns the forest. And we know that. But when we're out in the forest, we say Yetsinate, which means a living thing. So we don't even say its name when we're out there, because we're like, you say its name, it's going to be like, you talk to song.
Yeah.
you call me? Wait, you're in my house. And so we talk to them before we go into the woods, and we sort of live this life that's pretty connected to the natural world. So I think the other thing too is there's a fascination with an artificial world, because there's a prescribed disconnect with the natural world in order to maintain a sense of colonization and economics the way that it's required today. Like, you have to be separate from it to say, yeah, cut all the trees down. Yeah, like, kill off all those buffalo.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
like,
these mountain lions scare me, so just murder them, right? And so, but in order to do that, you have to remove yourself, which, you know, Christianity kind of did that already. It's like man has domain of everything, including women, right? And it just creates tons and tons of problems because I think human beings, and especially if you just narrow it down to one gender, don't have enough skills and ability to like manage the universe. It's sort of like, actually, you should just be in the universe and figure out how you're part of that. Because mm-hmm. you're in the food chain, you're in all these circles, you're in all these cycles, and what you do affect all of these things. And so I like the conversations. I think it's fun. I think it's fun to watch this stuff. Yeah. You're like, oh yeah, that is weird. Hey, that's pretty cool. But you can also zoom in on your iPhone. It starts to get pretty grainy. And then it's probably pretty easy when you got a shaky camera.
There's grains in my house. What the fuck? I think that kind of ties nicely into just, you know, if you have any additional thoughts on Avatar, but like the reality of, you know, what we're doing to the world and other humans and the history of what, you know, white people have done to the world and other human beings is maybe too uncomfortable for some people to take in, and they want to create an artificial reality. In the case of the Matrix, it's like just coming up with a system of belief that like we are in an unofficial reality. But in the case of Avatar, it's like creating an unofficial, like an artificial reality that you can go live in for a couple hours that also like rewrites that history, where you get to like be on the good guy side, on the side of the people being victimized by colonialism. Like I do think Avatar is really interesting just as a phenomenon, because I don't, like I can't think of another pop cultural thing that is as successful as that, those movies when they're happening, and then as completely embarrassing the second they stop happening. Like it happened right. Once with the first Avatar, and everyone was like, man, that was weird. And like Avatar was like a punchline. But then they did it again. Like he brought Avatar 2 out, and everyone went to fucking see that one too. And like they are the two of the three most top grossing movies of all time. But like nobody would put a movie poster of that movie up except ironically. And so I don't know. I think there's like a weird disconnect. And then we also have the thing where like people were experiencing depression after they like came out of the movie because they couldn't just like experience that reality around the clock. So it's definitely filling a need that people have, but one that is disconnected from their mind in a way that like makes it unique, where they can't like kind of incorporate it into their lives the way they can a Star Wars or something like that, where they make it part of their personality. Like it just feels like Avatar is this thing that is an experience, the thing you like try not to think about when you're not at an Avatar movie or something. But I'm curious to hear your thoughts on Avatar.
Well, you know, I think largely there's this fascination with white savior films, you know, sure. So Dances with Wolves. What was the one? Dangerous something, where there's like a white school teacher who goes into
Dangerous Minds.
Yeah, a black neighborhood. And, you know, and like there are certainly stories of people who come in and embrace community and become part of it and become something different and do fight racism and fight colonization, you know, but it's very rare, especially when they win or something. And so I started to think about this stuff quite a bit. And then there's a film called Real Engines, which is spelled R-E-E-L-I-N-J-U-N-S, which is a documentary on the history of Native Americans in film. And it kind of goes through a number of different sort of scenarios. And at one point, it talks about all these different white actors who have played Native Americans. And so there's a growing list of, you know, there's quite a few of them who have played Native Americans. And then you also just get really interesting things. Like there is a guy, I think his name was Iron Eyes Cody or Cody Iron Eyes. Right. I can never remember which way it goes, but he played so many Native Americans in films that he full on believed he was Native American when he died. And to some extent, I think his children do as well. And so like he can assume this entire identity. And so I think there's a fascination with that, to think about what if there was something different? But then there's a disconnect as well, because you don't really see that embraced in people's reality. Because if they come out of, like, let's say they came out of Avatar and said, whoa, like, I should learn an indigenous language and I should go contribute to a land back initiative. And I should actually do something that's embracing decolonization, because the film, you could argue, is about decolonization, right? It's a totally fictionalized decolonization. And so you could, like, if it translated into real action, that would be more interesting to me than just sort of saying, well, you know, it's a nice fantasy to say, oh yeah, well, what if we had actually done something a lot more humane instead of taking everything from everybody? Because if you look at some things, like, we talked a bit about the Supreme Court, who is all kinds of fucked up, like, just the types of things that they're doing. These decisions are horrible, and they're just destructive for movements towards equity. But the one thing they couldn't do is dismantle the Indian Child Welfare Act, you know? And so the reason why the Indian Child Welfare Act exists is because in the mid to late 1970s, one out of every four Native American children were removed from their homes and placed with white families. In addition, one out of every four Native American women were sterilized without their full consent. Like, this kind of stuff was still happening. And so the removal of people. And so, like, the other thing, I think there's a fascination with the idea that colonization had an end point, or it had, like, we're in this post-colonial sort of world, which we're not. And we could be, but it requires a consciousness that's going to move you beyond going to a movie for 2 or 3 hours and completely immersing yourself in this other idea and just saying, actually, we can have a reality that is kind of close to the Avatar universe, which, you know, I'm not opposed to that reality. But what I'm opposed to is the idea that it exists, or that going to the movie is somehow enough.
Right. Yeah. It's funny, too, because, like, if, like, to your point, if you're not coming out of the movie being like, wow, we got work to do, then really, then I don't know how good it's doing, because most people come out of that movie and be like, why isn't Pandora real? Why can't I go there?
Dude, that would be so tight.
So the message was maybe like secondary or tertiary to like the, wow, isn't this shit fucking cool anyway? Like, then there's like some other shit happens to these blue people, whatever.
Well, I came out inspired to be 7'6"
with a tail.
My name to Jake.
Yeah, with a tail, because that does help with balance. It turns out.
Yeah, and
stir my coffee with
sex too. Apparently, yeah.
Well, Hune, such a pleasure having you back on the show. Where can people find you, follow you, all that good stuff?
Yeah, well, I have a podcast called The Tongue Unbroken, and season 2 is launching in November. So we're going to launch during the start of the Native American Heritage Month. And the Next Up initiative is fabulous. And I really encourage you to just go check it out. It's the Next Up initiative with the iHeartRadio, and look at the current, there's a whole new generation of Next Up initiative folks who are coming out. And I'm really excited to hear their podcasts and to be a part of this movement where we're trying to find voices in the margins and pull them closer to the center. So you can find me. I'm sometimes on Facebook, sometimes on Twitter, although Twitter has gotten a lot less interesting as than it used to be. Oh, you know, this billionaire bought it, and like, and now his tweets just keep popping up, like, you know. Yeah. And so I tried to mute one of his tweets and says, this will make Twitter a better experience for you. And I was like, it will actually make Twitter a better experience for everybody if we saw a lot less of that voice.
Yeah. I've been getting a lot of AI ads that are just like really insult. Like, here, I screenshot one. Crazy thing happened with AskData.co today. Still in shock. I was troubleshooting with a customer on Zoom, and he had just gotten his person. And it's like, keep reading. Meet Data. Get it done. And it's like a promoted post for fucking some bullshit. Oh, they're all over the place. Anyways, yeah. I'm glad I interrupted for that.
Yeah. the other thing I really want to promote is just indigenous language revitalization. So if you're not familiar with what the Hawaiian language movement is, or Ojibwe or Mohawk or the Salish of Spokane, go look at what they're doing. Like, it's very possible. So on The Tongue Unbroken, we like to talk about, how do you do it? How do you take these steps? If you have 1,000 speakers left, if you have 10 speakers left, if you have no speakers left of your indigenous language, what kind of steps could you possibly take? And we like to envision a world where we dream the impossible dream and we get back to a place of strength, which takes action, which takes courage, which takes determination, and also takes a ton of self-analysis. Like, colonization isn't just about people creating a bunch of harm to people. It's like also the indigenous people internalizing that harm and then hurting each other, which we got a lot of work to do with that as well.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's Weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. It means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.